your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You've worked hard to get near your job search's finish line. After applying for oodles of jobs, networking ad nauseum, surviving rounds of interviews for naught, finally, a would-be employer says, "Okay, now we just need to check your references." Gulp. You're afraid, perhaps, that your previous boss could kill the deal. But perhaps you might try to comfort yourself with one or more of these myths, which I want to disabuse you of, so that when you get to that point, you are not unfairly disqualified. You might think, for example, "Well, my company's policy is not to give references other than the dates of employment and whether I was fired for cause." But by the way, for cause is a legal term referring primarily to willful bad conduct. In other words, you deliberately sabotaged the organization, you sold trade secrets to the competitive nonprofit, you sexually harassed somebody. Those are willful. Those are for cause. Poor performance is not for cause. In any case, you might rationalize, even though my employer thought I stunk, my company's policy is to not give references other than the dates of employment or whether I was fired for cause. Well, alas, even if that's true, tone and subtle language difference can speak volumes. For example, if the employer, it could be HR, it could be the hiring manager, whoever, says, he did work here and was not terminated for cause, is very different from, he worked here and he left voluntarily, right? Or that person trying to calm down about the would-be employer finding out the fact that his past boss hated his guts might rationalize, I hired a lawyer and I got my past employer to agree to give me a positive reference in exchange for my signing the severance agreement. Again, tone can tell all. There is a Grand Canyon of difference between he was a good employee and he was a good employee, let alone he was a great employee, right? Or the scared job seeker might decide, I think I'm not going to list my boss among my references. Alas, even many, at least, moderately savvy employers insist on a reference from your most recent boss or two. Another rationalization, the worried job seeker whose boss didn't exactly love him might think, all right, I've found three people who will say nice things about me. I'll just list those and that'll take care of the problem. Well, the fact is that some employers, they have to have your permission, will contact the department that you worked in and ask folks about you. And for important positions, and I've seen that happen a number of times, the assiduous, the careful employer might even ask if they could visit your former workplace. If your coworkers and boss there weren't exactly thrilled with you, you're in a catch-22. If you say yes, give permission for the prospective employer to visit your workplace or even to give references, they may spill the beans. But if you say no, I really don't think it would be great for you to visit the employer is going to wonder why. The next kind of, here's a tip on by the way, before I forget. Even if your boss loves you, I think it's really smart to not list any references on your resume. You see, that listing them is going to encourage employees to contact your references early in the hiring process. And as a result, your references may get contacted so often, they start to get annoyed with you. And then when you really finally need them at the end, they may be tepid toward you or maybe even not give you the reference at all. So if your boss and your coworkers and let me see, how do I want to say this to you? So what you really want to do is you want to wait. The time to give references is when the reference check is a final step between you and a job offer. Most employers understand that's appropriate, if only because you don't want to let your current employer know that you're leaving until you absolutely have to. So wait until you're really pretty darn sure you're near, about ready to get the job, and then give the references. Certainly don't put it on your resume, because then it's right there for the employer to just call, right away as an initial screen. That does not serve you. Now, the ration, the person who had a bad experience in his previous employment place could say, or his let's say his previous employment place was San Quentin in California, you could rationalize, oh, they can't ask me to check the box saying whether I have a criminal record. That's true. In just past 2018, a law was passed so that ex-offender job applicants get treated the same as non-offenders. There, that box, there is a box. It's called, I think, ban the box. You don't have to check the box. But let's put aside for the moment whether that's fair to people who have lived on the straight and narrow, don't have a criminal record. Let's put that aside. That's a whole ethical discussion for another day. But the fact is that even though they can, you're not allowed, you cannot check the box, when the employer wants to hire you at that last stage, the employer can make the job offer contingent on a check of your criminal record. You need to know that. So it may be better if you've got one, as you're going to see in a moment. I'm going to give the answer to all these dilemmas I'm going to share in a moment. So I'm presenting the problem, and you can't get away with it with these kind of cheesy, simple little, you know, tacky solutions that most employers know anyway. But I'm going to give you a real solution that one solution addresses the whole thing. The final kind of rationalization that the job seeker has, let's say a problem with his most recent employer or the one before, they could think, oh, well, I'll just preempt the entire problem by omitting my infelicitous places of employment. Well, that could well backfire. You see, many employers use a reference checking service, an independent reference checking service, not just to check your references, but to determine if you've omitted places where you've worked. Yeah, you can refuse to let the employer do that background check, but again, that could make an employer wonder why. The solution? I always try on this show to never bring up problems where I can't offer a solution. It's the Boy Scout solution. Or I guess in this equal opportunity, we always use the phrase Boy Scout. But the Boy Scout or Girl Scout, the Scout solution, is honesty, really. Every PR professional knows that the key is to get the bad news out early. Your employment wart, let's call it, is going to be more easily dismissed then than if the employer then digs and unearths it later. Then they can say, ah, gotcha. Of course, I'm not saying you should portray yourself mainly based on that bad experience. Of course not. You want to tout the positive, any legitimate positives you can. But timing matters, as in everything in life. Timing matters. So how do you, early on in the interview process, I'm not saying in your job application, say, my boss hated me. No, that's too early. But early in the interview process, there is a moment which is normally the best time to bring out said wart. It's right after you've given an answer that you sense the employer really liked. They nodded, they laughed, you sounded like you really nailed it, right? At that moment, you might briefly add something like, you know, I want to say something. I pride myself on my integrity, so I want to tell you something. It's a little uncomfortable, but my experience in my previous job wasn't the best. Then briefly, put the best legitimate face you can on that bad experience and then say or ask, I'm hoping that's not a deal killer. What do you think? Those four words, what do you think? J.W. Marriott, who is the founder of the Marriott chain, said the most powerful four words in the English language are what do you think? Because it really empowers the other person, and especially because you've been so forthcoming, there is a tendency then for that person to say, well, I'm not crazy about it or whatever, but let's go on forward. And now you've gotten the bad news out early, and the rest of the interviews and the reference checking process and everything else is going to proceed in a much more positive note. And there's always a recency effect. What occurs last is what it gets remembered by the employer. So getting the bad news out first nothing's a cure-all, but is a good darn solution to all of these other fears you might have about your past employment. At least with that crisp integrity, you may turn that lemon into lemonade, or lest I be too optimistic, at least if not lemon into lemonade, maybe lemon into water at least, so it's a neutral. In any case, those are my thoughts on job reference myths and how to cover yourself even if you haven't been nominated for sainthood in your previous job. But now I'd like to turn to you, my dear listeners, especially if you have had problems landing a job, and maybe your past employment has been an albatross around your neck, chainmail, like a tie that's chainmail, you know, that old, what they wore in the medieval era, that chain stuff. If you have had problems landing a job, I invite you to give a call. We do one on this show. The show's Work with Marty Nemco. And what we do is, what I do is, no royal we required here. What I do is I listen my butt off to your concern, and then I ask you questions, and hopefully I help you take a step forward so you don't have to feel like, even though the unemployment rate is at historic lows, 4%, that you don't feel like, oh my God, even if at 4% I can't find a good job. We can hopefully help you move forward. The phone number for that here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as always, you don't have to call just because you're having a problem landing a job. Anything directly or indirectly related to work, if you've got a problem, that's a good reason to call. You could be well employed and still miserable. You could be wondering whether it's time to hang it up. You could have an employee who's driving you crazy. You could be self-employed and you'd like me to play Shark Tank with you, ask you a bunch of questions, see if I would invest, see what suggestions I might make to improve your business. You're a nonprofit and you're a fundraiser. After all, money is the lifeblood of every nonprofit. You're not doing a good job or bringing in the bucks. Anything, or even sometimes people's relationship, personal relationship or lack thereof, caring for an aging parent, romantic interest, your own children, your adult children are back on your sofa. All of those can impede your ability to do work well. Anything related to work directly or indirectly is fair reason to call. The phone number here for a workover at KLW and Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we've been focusing on the job seeker who's been struggling, there are some important things that I have had a zillion clients, many of whom are job seekers, but many of whom are in a position to employ. And there are many things that hiring managers wish you knew. And some of these come from a review of interviewing a bunch of hiring managers that Allison Green did for U.S. News and World Report. I want to go to the phones for a minute, but I'm just going to share one, and I'll share some more later. One is, really, employers really want to know your real weaknesses. Claiming your biggest weakness, I'm a perfectionist, I try too hard, it's disingenuous. It may be true, but it looks like you're avoiding the question. Candidates who can't or won't come up with a realistic assessment of where they might improve or what's a weakness that they need to accept. I use this example often, and that is this. I am the world's worst team player. If you hire me and you put me on a team, I'm going to dominate or I'm going to feel I have duct tape over my mouth. You don't want to hire me. But if you need an individual contributor who can work hard, smart, and fast, that I can do. But by acknowledging that weakness up front, I establish huge credibility that what I'm going to say subsequently in the interview is going to be believed, and I will disqualify myself from jobs where I'll be unhappy and the employer will be unhappy. So please, employers need to know about a real weakness that serves them and it serves you. Make sense? Okay. Now, phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, I call them workovers, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, it's me.
It is.
Oh, I met you at the San Mateo County Fair, and I thought you were great and amazing. And
thank you.
And then all of a sudden, I heard you on the radio. And I thought, oh my God, he's there.
I'm ubiquitous. You turn over every rock, and I'm there. You know. Anyway, how can I help you?
Well, I channel surf, and I was like, oh my God, I heard you. Anyway, the reason I'm calling is because I'm always looking for a job. Okay, I'm kind of. Let's see, that's a weird story. How do I say this? Okay, this one problem I have. I looked my name up on the internet, and it said I had a criminal record, and I don't do anything. I've never been a criminal in my life, and so I had this company erase my thing. And I don't want it to be said that I'm a criminal.
Of course
not. I don't
commit
crimes.
Right.
So I wanted your advice on what to do.
Oh, a couple of things. Well, so, first of all, when you look at the, when you they say that particular criminal record, have you gone to the? Does it say in what court it was? You know, San Francisco?
No, it didn't. It just said. When I saw it, like it came up, it was like this weird thing. You know, how they all of a sudden advertise something and they go find out about somebody, blah blah blah. Well, I typed my own name in just because for fun.
Sure.
And I was shocked. It said my name was. And I'm not a criminal. I work in juvenile hall, all right?
Okay, fine.
But
yeah.
I don't commit crimes.
Sure.
So, I don't believe in that. I love those kids and everything, but I'm not a criminal. So
a couple of thoughts.
Maybe,
hold on. So
yeah, I'm sorry. I was
couple of thoughts. So first of all, there are many unsavory companies in almost every industry,
yeah.
Unfortunately. And so I would, first of all, if I had to pay the $9.95 to get all the details, I'd pay the $9.95. I would then look and see what court they're saying, you know, what is the specific crime? Then I would go contact that court and see, maybe you forgot. Maybe you were a DUI 20 years ago or whatever the hell it is. And then see if you can get it expunged. And if there's nothing there, then you can simply, you know, you can just ignore it and don't let it freak you out. It's just another scammer, you know, doing
it.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense, but it's just, I mean, I don't know. It's bizarre.
You know, the internet. It's like we're all naked now. The internet makes you. All you do is Google, and you see every wart, every beauty mark, everything. And you know, maybe I'm being Pollyannish, but employers know that unless it's something real serious, they take stuff with grains of salt. You can't. You know, I have had a troll for 12 years. I'm very critical of higher education. I think it rips off a lot of students. And somebody who was a professor at a university and a true believer hated my guts. At this point, I was a blogger at the Chronicle of Higher Education. And he has...
Thanks for being honest.
Oh, yeah. And he has constantly, every time I write about higher ed, he makes up crap about me that is, again, I can't understand. He changes his handle, so I have no idea who he or she is. And so, you know what? In the end, you want to sleep at night, baby. And what's going to enable you to sleep at night is, you know, if you've been a good person, look, none of us are saints. We've all done crappy things, and it may even show up on a damn Google search. But in the end...
Well, I get tickets every once in a while.
Good, so do I. I have a bachelor's degree in traffic school.
Me too. You're so sweet.
I try.
Oh my God.
Anyway... spend the $9.95, buy a 1 week subscription, or they'll give you a free trial subscription for a week. Find out what the specifics are. Contact the court, see if it's real or BS. And if it's BS, give him or her the finger, that company the finger, and move on and be proud of your life that you're a relatively straight arrow, even if you got a couple
but
of twiggles.
But I can't call every single one of them. I mean,
no,
what
do you mean every single? It says you have a lot of criminal, a lot of crimes?
No, I don't know. I never did anything wrong. No, I've never been arrested, nothing.
Okay, so what I'm saying, let me slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you did this search and they identified a crime, but they're not being specific.
Right.
In order to get the specifics, you normally have to pay them some money.
Right, right.
So pay them the little money, the $9.95 or $14.95, whatever, for your peace of mind. Jesus, you spend that much on a drink. This is going to give you a lot more peace of mind than one of those $12 Cosmopolitans or whatever.
Well, isn't there a website with like all the criminal records that you could look up for free? That's what I want. I want to see what it says about me. That's all.
Well, I think there are public records that will. So I don't know what that website would be, but I certainly would Google something like public records, criminal records search.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm trying to do.
So I would do that, but you say it came when you did a Google search. It came up that you had a criminal record. So there's something that is either really or BS turned up. So I would do both of those things. I think you're perfectly right in trying to find that public search. That's great. But I would also see what the hell the specific thing is.
All right.
And that'll put you to give you peace of mind, okay?
I called the company and they canceled. They said, we'll take your name off if you want. I'm like, yeah, take my name off because I'm not a criminal and I don't know what this is.
Wow. So
that's what I did.
The fact that they would do that. See, if they were a legitimate company and you had a criminal record, they wouldn't take it off. The fact they just took it off like that with a quick phone call suggests they're a scammer.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. A metaphorical hug across the airwaves. Okay, we lost it. But anyway, thank you very much for calling the show. And let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I've been listening to your show for about a year now.
I'm glad.
I recently moved to the Bay Area from the East Coast, and I've been really enjoying your show.
Thank you.
My question is, my husband is a CPA. He's a foreigner. He's had a CPA license for over 10 years in his home country.
Okay.
He recently got his local CPA license for the state of California.
Great.
So now he's fully licensed.
Great.
He's struggling to find a new job. He has a job at a small startup that he feels is not helping him enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my very specific question is, how important is the cover letter in the sense that you're directing it towards the employer that you're applying to?
It's never the most important.
It's a very generic cover letter.
No good. No.
It's not good.
All right. If I had a pie, and the pie was all the factors that affected whether you get hired, the cover letter is generally about a 5% piece of the pie. Sure, you don't want it generic because that shows you have no interest. And they may not look, especially if you're applying to a large employer, they're going to be using an automated tracking system that isn't even going to look at a cover letter. They're just going to look at the resume for keywords. But eventually, if it gets past that machine, or it's a small company, they will read the cover letter. And the best way to write a cover letter is something like this. I'll give you just a model. It's like, dear whoever, I was delighted to see this job opening because I'm a good fit and I happen to live, close by. I also know about you. I Googled your company and I liked it. You're doing blah, blah, and blah. And the job fit is really quite a good fit. And then you list word for word an important characteristic that is being required in that job. And then underneath it, you say how you meet the requirement. Then you list another one of the job requirements listed in the ad and how you meet it. And the third one, you do a third characteristic of the job requirement and how you meet it. Then afterwards, you say, of course, there's more to me that can be summarized in a chart. People say they enjoy work with me because of blah. Whatever, I'm a relaxed guy under pressure. I'm unusually quick. I know a lot about international finance, whatever the hell it is, and then say, so I'm hoping to get a chance to talk with you to substantiate all this sincerely. That's a good cover letter. It's really customized. It's brief. It gets to the point and gives a very concrete set of reasons why they should interview you. But that said, as I said, it's only 5% of the pie. Or to change the metaphor, it's the whipped cream on the cake. Unless the cake is good, it's no good. Normally what happens is there's a number of things that are bigger proportions of the pie. One of which is a specialization. Since your husband is from another country, it may well be that he has expertise and or linguistic competence or cultural competence that might be a plus for certain kinds of companies or nonprofits or government agencies. He should try to find... Where is he from?
He's from Israel.
Great. Wonderful. So, first of all, I want to do a plug for Limud. Limud, L-I-M-U-U-D, Google it, is a conclave, a getting together of 350 Israelis that have business interests. It's going to be at the end of June, June 30th. I've actually been asked to speak there. And he'll have an amazing chance to network with other Israelis. The second thing is many, many startups and larger companies, if not Israeli run, have a significant Israeli involvement. And his knowledge of Hebrew and his understanding of the Middle East even more broadly could be a real value. So, we say we celebrate diversity, but that's a lie. Really, in the phrase that Madeleine Albright said, sisters help sisters. There's a special place in hell for sisters who don't help sisters. It's also true that I've seen in most workplaces, they tend to be monoculture. There are Indian work largely, not completely, but largely Indian workplaces, Japanese, Chinese, and Russian, and Israeli. So finding Israeli companies that are based here might be a better edge. And not only should he just apply for jobs through the front door with the cover letter I described, but he should go to various events that are either put on by those Israeli companies, or he should, even if a job is not advertised, to write to the chief financial officer or the controller of those companies, telling what he brings to the table, even if there's not a job advertised, and that starts a relationship. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope to see it, you and him. It's for families as well as the job person at Limud. It's going to be at Sonoma State University on the last week of June, and it's spelled weirdly in a transliteration from the Hebrew, L-I-M-U-U-D, and some really heavy hitters are going to be there. So it's worth coming.
Great. Thank you for the information. We'll definitely check it out.
Cool. Okay. Also cool would be if you would call. If you have a work-related problem, I invite you to call here at KLW and Work with Martin Emko. I'm relatively new in this time slot. I was 28 years at another time slot where the lines would all fill up the first minute. So what I think I want to do is prime the pump a little bit. The third edition of my book, The Best of Martin Emko, which has the best 86 of my 3,000 articles in a book, the first three people to call will get a copy of that new edition. But in order to do that, you're going to have to call, but then at the end of the show, after the show is over, you need to call back and give your name and address to Colin, the board operator, so I know where to send it. Okay, anyway, whether you want the book or not, if you've got a work-related problem, the price is certainly right, zero, zippo, nada, any kind of work problem, I've been doing it a long time, the harder the problem, the better. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I was, before I was taking the calls, which I always do try to prioritize you, I was offering some suggestions of things that hiring managers wish you knew. You do need to address being overqualified in your cover letter. If you don't acknowledge it, employers are afraid you're going to be bored, that you don't understand the position, that the salary will be too low. Employers need to hear stuff in the cover letter like, at this stage in my career, having a job I enjoy is more important to me than salary. I have no problem earning less than I have in the past. Or, I want to move into this field, and I know that I need to start at a lower level in order to do that. Or, I wouldn't take a job I'm not looking forward to. So, do address being overqualified. Don't dumb down your resume. It's smarter normally to address why somebody who has a higher level position in, you know, previously would be willing to take a lower level job. Another thing that many job seekers don't realize that employers want to know is, this is kind of really basic, you can be too early at the job interview. You know, employers get annoyed when the candidate shows up more than 5, maybe 10 minutes early, since they may feel obligated to interrupt what they're doing and go out to greet you, and some of them feel vaguely guilty leaving you sitting in the reception area that long. So aim to walk in 5 minutes early, no more than that. Okay. Another example of what employers want you to know if you are a job seeker. Leave the subjective descriptions off your resume. Your resume is to list your experience and your accomplishments. It's not the place for subjective stuff like great leadership skills or creative innovator. Most employers will ignore anything subjective that an applicant writes about him or herself because many people's self-assessments are inaccurate or just deliberately exaggerated. Your resume, what should it answer? One key question, and that's why it should be adapted to each employer. What did you accomplish in this job that is important to me, the employer, that other candidates might not have? So as you're crafting your resume or adapting the generic resume you have, really ask yourself, what did you accomplish in that previous job of yours that is important to this new employer that the other candidates don't have? And finally, when you want to talk in interviews, you got to be concise. There is always, I mean, there's no faster way to shoot yourself in the foot than being too long-winded. You might think, well, some people are long-winded, but that doesn't mean that person will do a good job. The problem is it signals you're not good at picking up conversational cues, you don't have good emotional intelligence, it raises doubts about your ability to organize your thoughts quickly, to convey the needed information quickly. So I urge you, and I've said this a number of times on the show, follow the traffic light rule. During the first 30 seconds of an utterance, your light is green, they're listening, you haven't got too much content, they don't think you're a windbag. In the second 30 seconds, your light's yellow, they're beginning to wonder, is she going to shut up or are you going to shut up? And after 60 seconds, your light's red. You really better shut up unless it really is a story that takes an awful lot of, you know, that requires more than a minute to say, but certainly don't go much beyond that. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
My name is Nikki. I'm actually calling about your previous guest that you just had on about having it say that she has an arrest record.
Oh, yeah.
So that's actually just an ad. She doesn't have to worry about it.
I thought so.
It's like an automatically generated ad. I actually heard something on KLX yesterday about this. It actually targets people with three different possible ads, but there's a 25% chance that you're likely to get this type of ad.
Exactly, and that's why I told her, you know, either pay $9.95 for the specifics, or the fact that she called and they immediately pulled her off made it clear that this is one of those scammers.
Yeah, I just didn't want her to spend money. I felt
fair enough.
Bad for her.
Yeah, and then I do too. Nikki, you are an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce. I have particularly good feelings toward people who call in not because they want something for themselves, but they're really trying to be nice to somebody. So we live in a very hard world, I think, especially here in the Bay Area. People always have their game face on. They're really into they mouth these nice words about kumbaya, but they're really, it's not real. It's
so
BS.
Not real.
It's
I've been
so
working
not real.
In the tech industry for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fake. The whole thing, like, it's really difficult being female and working in the tech industry. It's like, I know all that stuff has come out about it, but, like, they're making it seem like it's still good, but it's not. It's still awful.
Yeah. Well, I thank you very much for the call. Appreciate
thank
it.
You
sorry
so much.
You're struggling. Yeah.
Bye.
It is, you know, it is so hard in general when people are not giving you respect in the workplace to parse out how much is your race, how much is your gender, how much is your merit. And it's never clear. It's not like somebody's going to say something overtly racist to you. We tend to be too sophisticated for that. So really the advice I'd give my sister, my brother, myself, is don't jump too quickly to the race, class, gender, sexual orientation explanation, because that's comforting. Certainly it externalizes any responsibility. Start by looking inward and say, wait a minute. Is the reason they're blowing off my suggestion at the meeting because I'm a woman? Because I'm a minority? Because I'm gay? Or is it maybe my idea is, you know, not that bright? You need to ask yourself and trusted colleagues, because sometimes, you know, we can't know ourselves that well. So let's say you're worried that if you're a woman that your comments are getting blown off in Silicon Valley because you're a woman. Find another woman who's highly, unquestionably competent, who's respected by all, and ask her for honest feedback. And that can be often very helpful to parse out how much is your race, class, gender, sexual orientation, and how much is you. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello. You're there. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Christy. I'm calling from Danville. I have a question. I keep having this pattern in my career where I work for people who are truly, like my direct supervisor, is truly incompetent at their job. And I don't know how to handle it. I'm not sure. I've tried different things. And what I mean by this is that the person literally doesn't show up to meetings when they're supposed to. They don't understand how the department works. They don't understand what my job is as my supervisor. And they really seem to have no interest in learning it. They seem to really just be there to collect a paycheck. I've tried the route of going above them, which never seems to work out well. I've tried the route of talking to them directly, which never seems to work out. So I wanted your suggestion.
Great. You said it's a pattern. That's what stuck out for me. Then if it's a pattern, it usually means one of two things. Either you're working in a sector known for unreliable people or people who are just punching the clock to get a paycheck, or you're not doing a good enough job of vetting the job when you're applying. In other words, during the interview process, you're not just there to be slammed with their questions. It's a first date. You need to be asking them questions and reading between the lines. And when you're offered a job, you don't need to say, oh, great, I'm so glad I got the job. You need to say, I'm pleased to get the offer. I'm wondering if I could come in to negotiate terms. You're not just coming in to negotiate terms, but you're going in to check out the workplace. Do people seem engaged and alive, or are they all sitting around polishing their nails and reading sports magazines? So which of the two, do either of the two feel like they may be resulting in you having crappy bosses all the time? Either you're in a sector that tends to get people who are not very dedicated to their work, or are you not doing a good enough job of vetting a potential employer?
I worked in several different sectors, very, very different ones, so I don't think it's that. It probably is the vetting part of it, but I try to be diligent about that and ask you know, what I consider informed questions, but I don't really understand how to vet a potential supervisor.
Well, let's say that supervisor is normally one of the people interviewing you. Can you tell me a little more about the kind of work you do, and you know, or more about tell me a little bit about the industry or the nonprofit or the government agency, and what kind of work you do, so I can role play what I would do to try to vet the situation.
Well, I can tell you my previous job was as a lobbyist.
Okay.
I was a lobbyist, and I worked for somebody who had a severe alcohol problem, and that also seems to be a pattern. I work for bosses who, I think what contributes to them not showing up on time to meetings and et cetera, is they have substance abuse issues.
Okay. So if I were interviewing for, let's say I was interviewing for a job as a lobbyist, in the interview, first of all, before I even went to the interview, I'd Google that lobbying organization. If it's a particular, let's say, a nonprofit activist organization or a trade association or whatever, I would certainly Google it and learn as much as I could, not just the stuff that they put out, but what people say. I'd go to Glassdoor.com, which has reviews of thousands of employers from workers. Now, yes, there's going to be a disproportionate percentage of disgruntled ones, but those are certainly pieces of data that you can draw some inferences. Then in the interview, some of the good questions say is, how come this position has become available? How many people have had this position in the last few years? If it's five, if there's been high turnover of your boss's supervisees, that's certainly a red flag. If you can say, you know, what would define you? How would you, you know, every boss is a little bit different. How would you define your work style and the way in which we'd interact? Say, well, I'm pretty hands-off and I'm pretty laid back about this and that or whatever. You can get a feel for whether they're driven, not driven enough. So asking questions like that, open-ended questions, and then when you're offered the job, again, visit the workplace, not only to, yes, check out the vibe, but I always recommend that you hang out in the break room for a little while. And I'm not saying that the fellow employees are going to go and bare their souls and tell all the dirty, dark secrets. But if you go and you say, hey, you know, I've just been offered a job here, can you give me a little idea of what it's like to work here that I might not find in the employee handbook? Then watch their eyes. They say the eyes are the windows to the soul. If their eyes widen or really narrow or whatever, or they say, oh, it's okay working here, that's very different than somebody with a big natural smile who says, oh, it's really cool, the boss is great. So all of those are data points. No one of them is dispositive. That's a legal term meaning, you know, is the deal killer or the deal winner. But each one of those adds to the probability that you're going to have a good boss. And you can still guess wrong, but at least that's going to improve your odds. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. And I'd be happy to help you. At whatever your station in life, like using that metaphor because we're on a radio station here. Wherever your station in life, whether you're 16 or 76, self-employed, or employed by the government, or a company, small company, large company, whether you're making $1 million a year, and I have some clients who are doing that, or you're dead broke and sitting vaping in your apartment with 9 roommates eating ramen and cat food, and wondering what the hell to do. I usually can be of some help. I've seen it all. I've been around a while. So whatever your work problem is, direct or indirect, I'd like to help you, and the price is certainly right. Zero here, thanks to KLW and me. This is my pro bono work. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, I'm kind of this particular show has been focusing on people with problems, with a checkered work history or whatever. And so a lot of times they can't get the job of their dreams. So they end up, at least in the interim, to avoid being homeless, they got to do side hustles. And it's kind of sad. There's plenty good people who are ending up having to do what, you know, traditionally have been thought of as side hustles that are ending up being their only source of income. And it speaks to the, you know, the fact that there really is a growing dearth of good jobs. There's a lot of crap jobs out there, and there's a lot of, you know, 80-hour-a-week killer jobs. But these middle normal jobs, there aren't that many of them, and they're really hard to get. I remember just 2 weeks ago on this show, I had a woman who was an expert at getting a federal job, and she says there were often 500 to 1,000 applicants for every federal job, and then it takes between 6 and 18 months typically to get it. So it's easy to get a crap job, And if you're a superstar artificial intelligence programmer, it's easy to get a great job. But if you're a normal human being, it is not so easy. So a lot of people have to do these side hustles. So I want to share a couple of them now. Then I'm going to go to the phones. So some of the perhaps less obvious ones are some people who would like to work at home. Libraries, public libraries, have book sales every 6 months or a year, and they don't sell all the books. And there are hundreds left or thousands left that they are going to recycle and just throw in the garbage. They'll give them to you for free if you'll haul them away. You take those books and you sell them on Amazon or on eBay for, you know, you look at the name of the book and you look at what the fair market value is. You know, they've got all the prices of the used books and sell them. So within the comfort of your home, the product, the books will cost you zero. And maybe you make $2 or $3 or $5 on a book, plus they you can add $3.99 shipping. And if you send it media mail, it's only costing you $1.50. So there is some money. You know, you're not, none of this is going to get you rich. These are what I'm deliberately calling side hustles. But there are ways to make money that are less risky than the typical starting your business idea. Or, and maybe this is just because I love Trader Joe's so much, is my every night, right before they close, I take my dear doggy Einstein with me for a walk to Trader Joe's. And then I just love the store. I think their products are great in general, fair price. The clerks are wonderful. So, you know, and everybody, every clerk I've ever met at Trader Joe's seems to like working there, as opposed to Safeway, where they all hate it. So, oh, not all is too strong. I don't want to get sued. It's fair to say. In general, I will say my opinion is that the staff of Trader Joe's is generally happier than the staff at Safeway. That's a fairer statement. So, you know, those jobs, those are not career jobs. People tend to do that for a while and then leave, but the pay is reasonable. People say they're paid well. They feel good about it. Get a job at Trader Joe's if you're at all personable. They really hire personable people. So that's a couple of side hustles. I have a lot more, but I want to prioritize you, my dear listeners. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Hi. My name is Catherine. Listen, I just wanted to follow up on the woman who had a lot of bad bosses.
Okay.
I'm a medical professional, and in healthcare, there's actually a tradition of doing what you were talking about. It's called shadowing.
Right.
So that when you either when you're still looking or when you've been offered a job, you can say, "I would like to shadow someone who already does what I'm going to do for, you know, 2 hours or 4 hours." Or
I love it. Right.
Whatever.
I love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great way to get a total feel for the place.
What do you think about the idea? Let's say I was applying to be a nurse at Kaiser, and mm-hmm. I've just been offered the job, and I say, you know, I want to get a good feel for this. So, and it's one way for me to do that would be to shadow a nurse. I'd like to shadow a nurse for an hour. But if I, you know, you're the charge nurse, you're the head, you're the kind of be my supervisor. I'm wondering if I could even shadow you for an hour. Would that be seen as inappropriate?
It's not inappropriate, but it would not give you the picture that you want. You want to know what it's like to work for her.
Right.
And you're not going to get that when she's around.
Got it. Well, if you're following another nurse and the supervisor comes by, won't you also get an equally invalid impression?
No, because she's not going to be there the whole time. And the nurse doesn't have to tell you in words what it's like.
Right.
It's just like any office, you know. You just have
to see what they're
doing in the time you're there and how they feel about it. That's
you have to have your antenna amplitude up. So if I were a nurse, to take an example, I would be watching how frenetic the nurses were, how burned out they seemed, their posture, how they were interacting with patients, how the patients felt when the nurse came in.
And even more importantly, how the nurses interact with each other.
Absolutely.
Because if they're not supporting each other, it's not a good place to work.
Good point. Good point. Again, Catherine, another honored member of my Work with Marty Nemko workforce.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
I appreciate your call very much. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you, or do you have something to share with our dear listeners? Hi,
yes,
it's you.
This is Don.
Hello, Don.
I would like to get your opinion on online courses that are offered by, let's say, UC Davis or UC Berkeley.
Right.
I'm really looking at UC Davis. Their online courses, you often get a certificate or
right.
just general knowledge. To me, they look interesting on paper. Some of them look really good. That would be helpful in my job. But they also seem a little pricey. But I just wanted to get your general feedback on that.
Absolutely. It really is like asking if eating at a restaurant is good or bad. It depends who's doing the cooking. And the beauty of online courses is there are so many available. You can see that there are three websites that you need to that have literally probably 100,000 courses on them, all with reader user reviews, detailed syllabi, etc. And that is Coursera.org, Coursera.org, edX.org, and Udemy. I love Udemy, Udemy.com. Why do I like Udemy particularly? Because I'm a practical soul at heart. And when somebody is looking for something to help their career, they don't want something so academic. They want something practical. And Udemy.com is not only taught by master practitioners generally, but they're dirt cheap. It's unbelievable. They're like $20, $30, $50. So I'd be looking at edX, Coursera, and Udemy. And if you're a techie person, there are some courses. Udacity.com is a good source of tech courses. Also, there's something called Masterclass, which blows me away. Like world-famous people teach these courses, world-famous actors and directors and writers and whatever, and comedians teach these courses, I guess because you can have thousands of students in the class because they're basically lecturing, and they probably have a TA who's answering questions. And those are under $100 a piece. You know, I think we're, and I mentioned, I didn't mention it yet, but I mentioned it when I taped my promo, there's this thing called the Great Courses, which I also like. They're a little academic, but for $30, $40, $50, you can take courses from the best professors in America. This company called The Great Courses, based out of Washington, D.C., only takes like national big teaching award winners and whatever, and has them teach a wide range of courses. And for under $100, you can get them as downloads, you can get them as CDs, you can get them in video. If it's like an art history course, you can get a video. The Great Courses is damn awesome. So we are in an era in which the traditional higher education is a dinosaur. Having to show up Tuesday, Thursday from 7 to 9 with whoever that one professor is who's teaching that course, finding the parking spot, which is impossible these days, the traffic, which is even more impossible, is crazy. So, but there are a lot of crappy online courses. But if you're self-motivated, looking at the sources I just told you should enable you to get an awesome online course for cheap.
For the courses that, or this website you just mentioned, I see as being probably excellent for just getting general knowledge. But if you want a, let's say, an accredited certificate, then I guess you really have to think about the university extensions.
I have two thoughts about that. Yes, UC extension is expensive, relatively expensive. The cost for a certificate costs you a couple $1,000s. And sometimes it's worth it. I've had good experiences with my clients going to UC Berkeley Extension. They do a very careful job of vetting. So they're not bad guys at all. These are not. The bad guys are some what I call the mid-tier private colleges, the Syracuses, the USCs, the Tulanes, you know, the NYUs. Those are really rip-off, expensive, horrible places like the University of Pennsylvania Wharton online school. They charge $150,000 for these online. Those guys I consider the bad guys. But UC Extension for $1,200-$1,500, it's not cheap, but it's not terrible. But there also are certificates available at some at these Courseras and at the edXs. Some of those are indeed. I remember there was somebody who was one of my clients took a online certificate program at Penn Wharton, somehow offered through edX or through Coursera, that ended up being only $1,000 or something like that total for the whole certificate. So these online courses aren't just single, you know, one-off courses. I think before I spent money on a course that wasn't great online at UC Davis, I would search those other websites and look to see if there's a smarter competitor.
Sounds like a great source of information. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Bye.
Okay, I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, the last time I'll give out the call for tonight, I'm always happy to help. You can hear my enthusiasm in my voice. It's a privilege to be doing this. So if you have a work-related problem of any sort, I welcome your call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4800. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Well, before I was taking your calls, I was offering some side hustles because I was mentioning that the reality is that even though the unemployment rate is at historic lows at 4%, that hides the fact that there are many people who have given up on searching for a job. There are many people who are doing crap jobs that formerly had full-time jobs with benefits. You know, the picture is not as rosy, and so many people are forced to take side hustles as their main hustle. And so I've been offering a couple of options that are not so obvious. I want to mention an edgy one. I think it's bizarre that we still live in a relatively puritanical world. People are having group sex, and you know, we're no more binary sexual or whatever. And yet, somehow, being an exotic dancer or a sex worker is somehow seen askance. I don't think it is. There is nothing wrong with consensual sex, for money or not. And so, because of our crazy puritanical world, we tend to pay quite well for that because there is a lot of people uncomfortable with it. But if you are comfortable with it, and it could be a male, you know, that we have this is the epicenter for gay life here, male or female, straight or gay, being an exotic dancer or a sex worker, there is, in my judgment, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Other than, to some extent, I guess it's still illegal. At least I shouldn't say that then. I can't be allowed to state my opinion. But legal, quasi-legal or not, exotic dancer, let's call it, or escort or massage therapist or whatever you're legally allowed to call it, that could be a way to make real money doing something that if you feel good about it, and something to consider. One more and then I'll go back to the phones. San Francisco remains, notwithstanding a lot of people who have stopped wanting to come to San Francisco because of the traffic, the homeless problem, etc., but it's still a major tourist attraction. And there are endless tours, not just the old-fashioned Gray Line tours, but there's everything from the Grave Line tours where they take you to cemeteries. There are celebrity tours. There are nature tours, enviro tours, all of whom need tour guides. You're not going to get rich, but what a fun side hustle is that? So look up Tours San Francisco, and if something floats your boat, maybe you know a lot about history or whatever and you want to lead a historical tour, or you're a nature buff or whatever, or you're a social activist, find the kind of tour that's commensurate with your abilities and knowledge and interests, and that's a nice way to make some money and perhaps even make some friends. So those are a few side hustles, but now I want to hustle to help you, my dear listener. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
I was listening to your stuff saying about the sex workers.
Right.
One of the things that happened recently is with when they wiped out Backdoor, a lot of sex workers were relying on the internet as a way to screen clients and kind of make it safer for themselves.
Okay.
So basically, that whole way of finding clients and finding safe ways to weed out the bad ones went away.
That's too bad.
So they're now having to do much more real life stuff, and more, it's a big thing about people being on the streets, and basically this more sane, consensual, safe way of interacting kind of vanished just recently.
Good point. You know, I was just thinking about, we always have ratings for the providers of services and for businesses and products, but there's now a movement to having ratings of customers. For example, Grubhub, the place is one of those delivery services like DoorDash, you know, and Uber delivery. They now will rate the customers as how much tip they left. So that if I am a Grubhub delivery guy, I don't have to take that. I'll see on my screen in my car, I'm going to see all of the orders that need to get delivered. I can see how much they tipped last time and pick only the ones that were at least decent tippers. That vetting of customers, I think, is a great trend. And whether it be sex workers, customers, or delivery or whatever, I think there'll be a time in which the customers are rated more. Does that make sense?
It does, and I've got something that goes the other way on it. It's one of the things that Uber did is when they thought they were being raided by the various government agencies, they had a program where they would basically fake that drivers were coming to them if they thought it was a government person. And I've had an experience where I was trying to get on a rental car or a Lyft organization, and I was connecting via VPN because I didn't want my net traffic intercepted by any random person. But that meant that I didn't have any drivers show up and no one was interested. And the person next to me had people showing up all the time. So I think I was getting picked up by that, by a similar thing there, where in my desire to have some privacy to my internet traffic, they thought that I was a potentially less than ideal customer.
Well, thank you for that, for sharing that. I have only a little time left, so I'm going to thank you for the call. What I want to do is, I've got this, just 2 minutes left, and so what I want to do is I want to share some more of these side hustles because, you know, they are real sources of money. There's the obvious one, you know, working at a bar. There's bartender and there's bar backs. People work, you know, they're not quite ready to be a bartender yet, but a bar back is where you start. And a bouncer. Bouncers, you know, most times don't have to do anything. If you're big and strong, you can make good money being the guy out in the front vetting people and taking, you know, and it's not status, but you're not hurting anybody. Hopefully you don't have to hurt anybody as a bouncer. But bartender, bar back, bouncer is one of those side hustles that can make you serious money. Because, again, one of the oldest rules in the book is follow the money. There's a lot of money made in bars. I mean, if I when I get that $10 drink, it's costing them 50 cents to make. And so there is profit to go around, and therefore some of it, yes, stays in the owner's pocket, but more of it is likely to get distributed rather than a very tight margin business where there's very little net profit, like in the bookstore business. Almost everybody in the bookstores make minimum wage or near it because there's very, very little profit, and also a million people want to work. I would want, if I needed a kind of a job, I'd rather get less money. I'd love to work in a bookstore. That'd be my first place, kind of a low-volume bookstore. I could spend a lot of time helping people, you know, pick out stuff. And but, you know, the pay tends to be crapola. To the anyway, a version that's one step removed from the bartending is, in you know, we don't think about it, is the caterers. You know, when you're catering up various parties or whatever, there's generally they hire people to lug the trays and whatever, but there's also bartenders and that could be a fun way to make some money and get to meet people. I know people who work as bartenders for caterers, and remember, the people who can afford caterers tend to be rich, so you tend to meet people who may be in a position to employ you, or somebody have a romantic relationship with you who's not broke and starving and eating that cat food and ramen. So being a bartender for a caterer is kind of an under-the-radar kind of job. Now, I'm a writing-type guy, and so people don't realize, yes, there are editor jobs, but being a proofreader, millions of people, including me, have some of my books have been published by major publishers, but some have been published on Amazon CreateSpace. And many of them don't have the money or the resources to, you know, like in a major publishing house, to do a lot of proofreading of the book. And so there's a lot of books that come out on and self-published Amazon CreateSpace that are filled with errors. And you being a proofreader, looking at books that have already come out that are published by Amazon, and you can look on the Amazon website, you can look inside the book, and if you see there's a bunch of errors, contact the author, and you may well be able to get a gig as a proofreader. Make sense? Oh, I want to remind you, if you are among the first three people to call, I promise, and I try to keep my promises, you will get a free copy of the brand new published third edition of The Best of Marty Nemco, which has my best 86 articles out of my 3,000. So as soon as the show's over, right at 8:01, wait, because my board operator's got to do stuff between now and 8 o'clock, but at like 8:01, call and leave your name and address so that I can mail you the book. And the phone number to call then at 8:01 is 415-841-4134. One more time, that's 415-841-4134. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I do want to thank my board operator, Colin Peden, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in, especially those of you who had tips and suggestions. That makes it part of a nice community here. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, I will talk with Dr. Edward Stewart. He teaches a course, one of those great courses that I talked about, those highly vetted great courses called Capitalism versus Socialism, Comparing Economic Systems. We're going to aim for an even-handed exploration. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archive of Dr. Marty Nemco's articles, information on his 9 books, including the new third edition of The Best of Marty Nemco, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemco.com. That's Marty, NEMKO.com. Join Marty again next Thursday evening at 7 for Work with Marty Nemco, here on 91.7 FM, KALW, San Francisco.